Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 236 for August 26, 2019. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and today we will be discussing the 309th weekly report. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at this yet, just go to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can access either the web or PDF version there. We're trying something a little different with this episode. We're going to record it, recording it live. With people watching it live, and it's going to be audio only. So I'm going to post it still to YouTube and all the podcast networks, but it'll be an audio only episode, and we're going to give that a try. And everyone, you know, all the guests have their own presentations that you can go watch if you want to see more about how they look at charts and that sort of thing. But we're just going to focus on the discussion for this episode and the information that they want to share. So today I have arranged for Jim Kenny, Mark Sachs, Jake Bernstein, and Michael Filigera to join us, and Jim will be moderating. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay. Thank you very much, David. And great to have everybody with us today, because I think this is a very interesting week, technically and fundamentally. It seems like it could be a very interesting week on how it shakes out. We've got three great guests here that are going to give us insight, and we're going to let them introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about their company one by one, so you guys can get acquainted with them, and then we can proceed from there. First up is going to be Mark Sachs, who is with RightLineTrading.com. And Mark, a quick background on yourself and a quick intro on Rightline.
This is Mark from Rightline Trading, and I'm a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania. My background is in mathematical modeling, and that's essentially the style of our software. We look at each individual market as a closed system and look to determine what forces are brought to bear on price off the right edge of the chart. I published about 15 peer-reviewed articles. You can Google them at Sachs MK if you want. Take a look at them. The last one I published was in 1991. They're old, but they're still indexed. And I'm at www.rightlinetrading.com.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Mark. And of course, at the end of the broadcast here, you're going to get more details on any special offers that the guys have, or any trades they're looking at that they'd like to share. So keep in tune for the end of the broadcast as well. Next up is Jake Bernstein. Jake is of trade-futures.com, and he's been in the business for a very long time. So he's going to explain a little bit about his background and, of course, what he's into right now.
Thank you very much. I made my first trade in the summer of 1967. Been trading ever since. Wrote 45 books. Been on Wall Street Week, CNBC many times, Financial News Network before that. I've lectured at 800 different seminars and webinars all over the world. I'm a real trader. I trade what I teach, and I teach what I trade. I have a website, trade-futures.com. There's a lot of information there. You can see it. I'm a numbers guy. Everything I do is by the numbers, track records, performance, mathematics, no fundamentals whatsoever, just pure, consistent, totally objective methodologies. So I'm done with that for now.
All right. And Jake is also very much informed on seasonality. And since we are in the week before Labor Day, maybe later in the broadcast, he could share if there's any seasonality to the week before Labor Day, looking on a historical basis. That might be interesting to people today as well.
Good point. Got a lot to say about that.
Yeah. Okay. Mike Filigera of LogicalSignals.com. LogicalSignals.com. Hi, Michael. Just for the people who are not familiar with you, a quick update on your background and also your website.
Sure. My name is Michael Filigera. I am the owner of LogicalSignals.com, which kind of still sits by the sideline right now. I have been trading the market since 1979. Very similar to Jake. I don't really pay attention to fundamentals. I'm really a technical trader, and I'm a numbers guy, just like Jake said. And I followed the numbers, and I follow them very closely, and have had my hits, but also many more successes in doing that. Presently, I am day trading, and I day trade futures, and I'll leave it there.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Again, I'm Jim Kenny, a content provider for OptionProfessor.com. You know, before we get started, I think myself and other people who are listening probably are looking at the market now, and they're seeing a lot of good news, bad news out there. We've had the 200-day moving average on the NASDAQ and the S&P hold so far, but we've seen those averages penetrated on the transports, the Russell, and the New York Stock Exchange. exchange. So some of the indexes have broken their 200-day and some have not. Also, the VIX is right around 20, which sometimes is a turning point one way or the other. And we also have got HYG, which is the high yield ETF or high yield, holding up very well, which obviously if the market was, game, set, match, these high yield funds generally would get hit. So there's a lot of confusing stuff out there. We're going to try to clear it up a little bit for people. We're going to start out right now with the first question, which is, which direction do you see the S&P moving between today's open and Friday's close? And might as well keep the same order. We'll start out with Mark Sachs. What do you think?
I'm also just really look at the technicals. I think you always have to have a concern for Trump tweets, but you really can anticipate them. So it's a variable you really can't take into account. But I'm bullish on the market this week.
Yeah, this question is really I think is written for a brief answer of up, down, or sideways, or no opinion at all. So out of those choices, which one would you pin your opinion to?
I would go with up.
Okay, sounds good. We'll get into the other questions, into more depth in a minute here. But sure. This one's really just an up, down, sideways kind of deal. Okay, next up is Jake. Jake, how do you feel between today's opening and Friday's close?
The seasonal pattern prior to Labor Day since the 1800s, late 1800s, has been very bullish on the day before Labor Day. So I would say up would be my choice.
That sounds pretty reasonable. Michael, how do you feel?
As the true contrarian, lower.
Okay. All right. So those are the responses here. And let's turn to the next question here and let's get some confidence levels. Most of the stuff you're doing, Mark, is on a relatively short-term basis. Am I right or wrong?
Correct.
Yeah. So anyway, at the end of the week might be an eternity for some traders because obviously they're focusing on a relatively short-term instruments. So, you may have an opinion or a view that we could rise by the end of the week, but your trading between now and Friday might be multifaceted, right?
Absolutely.
Let's just go to a percentage thing then. On a percentage basis on your confidence level, that we might rise by the end of the week. What percentage would you attach to it?
I would say 65%.
Yeah. Jake, do you have a certain percentage on that?
I'm going to give you a 50-50. And the reason I say that is not to hedge myself, but the bottom line is this. I will never take any trade that has been correct less than 70% of the time. So for me, it's a 50-50 shot. No trade for me this week.
I gotcha. And Michael, what's your percentage probability or confidence on that we might go lower this week?
65%.
Okay. Oh, you got diversity here, guys, who are listening. So that's a good thing. So anyone who's got an opinion will have somebody backing it a little bit. Third question is where we're going to, pull the curtain back and find out what's behind the opinions. So Mark, some of the reasons you think that we could go a little bit higher this week?
Well, first of all, the things that we watch both on a day trading basis and on a swing trading basis, is the multi time frame alignment and trend, which right now is strongly to the upside. I also look at money flow, on a short term and longer term time basis. That's also to the upside. And we look at the gear momentum on a multi time frame basis, and that's also to the upside. The third thing I look at is I don't look at the COT, the commitment of traders. I just look at the way that I look at Benzinga every day and look at the big options trades. And
Did you notice any options trade on Freeport MacMoran today? There is supposedly some very big activity on Freeport MacMoran. Did that show up on your radar?
Well, what I do is I look at it every evening.
Okay. So it might show up today.
In 5 seconds, I can tell you, if you hang on just 5 seconds here.
I was just listening to a broadcast and they were mentioning that and a biotech stock, Fibro or something or other.
I can tell you, I've traded that stock a few times. There today there were no big trades on it though.
Okay. You're not seeing any big trades, but there was some option activity, I guess.
No, there was no option activity at all.
On Freeport MacMoran or the other one?
On Freeport on FCX. What was the other stock that you're?
I don't know. The guy said there was like three. 3,000 or 6,000 options done today at a little bit out of the money at 950 or something. But
if I don't have a ticker,
yeah,
I couldn't tell.
Right.
I mean, there's Fibrogen.
That was the other one they mentioned. You showing action there?
Yeah, a lot of call action on that.
Right.
The big option, huge, was January 17th, 2020. And
right.
That was a monster call position.
Right.
There's also Alexion Pharmaceuticals. I don't know if that was Wheaton Precious Metals. These are huge call positions that are placed.
Yeah, maybe the Freeport did occur, because if Wheaton's got action, you know, it might make sense that they might be taking a bite out of the Freeport as well. But anyway, getting back to the point, which is your feelings on why it might rise, is some of your technical indicators are indicating that up is the path of least resistance?
Correct. Now, just to quickly go back to what Jake said, you know, I do have an options portfolio, which I make available to all of my traders. And the one thing I would not do this week, although I think the market's going up, is I would not add any positions. I would not add any bullish positions to the options portfolio this week.
Okay.
I'm happy with what I got. I'll ride it up, but I'm not going to take the risk of entering a new position long.
All right, let's roll over to Jake. Jake, behind the curtain there, what's your feeling on the possible rise? Obviously, you aren't a table-pounding bull, but, what are you seeing here for this week?
Let's look at three perspectives. If you're an investor, you're working off monthly data, you're bullish, it's been the biggest bull market in history, and it's fabulous. If you're an intermediate term investor, you came down to support, rallied from support, great buying opportunity. If you're a short term trader, working off daily charts, you're bearish. The trend has turned down, no question of it. But this is a really very, very sad situation. The average trader who tries to day trade, in my humble opinion, is getting screwed practically every day. The volatility is not such that most people can withstand it. And the introduction of the new micro mini S&P contract, it's giving people an opportunity to lose more money, but at a slower pace. So my perspective is this. If you're a trader, you can compete. You've got good day trading tools, fabulous opportunity. Unfortunately, most people don't have those tools, can't compete with professional traders, don't have the speed, don't have the methodology. So the bottom line is, if you can't get good probability, don't trade it. And that's what I'm basically on the sidelines for the short term and day trade, but intermediate term, long term, I remain very bullish.
Now, with regards to the seasonality factor of going into Labor Day, the week before. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. One of the best books ever written on the stock market was The Behavior of Prices on Wall Street by Art Merrill. Merrill did a great study on pre-holiday behavior. The pre-holiday behavior, by which we mean specifically buying Dow Jones or S&P on a close of trading Thursday, getting out on the close of trading Friday, Monday being Labor Day, high probability in the 70% range, higher close Friday compared to Thursday. And that's the seasonal factor. The seasonality in the stock market right now is behaving completely normally, going all the way back to the 1800s. So that would mean, as I said last week, higher toward the end of this month, higher and for the first week or two of September, then down until October, then the big year-end rally. And that's a normal situation, which is developing right on schedule this time.
Is there any statistics where the political side, you know, is, you know, obviously would be different, but, you know, is causing a lot of problems with regards to trade wars and schemes for reelection and maybe other things from the and running up deficits on one side and then putting pressure on the Federal Reserve to finance that idea? Has there been historical?
There haven't been sufficiently number of cases where we can test that statistically. So that's why we say we're just one tweet away from a 600-point rally. One tweet away from a 600-point decline, which most people can't deal with. And unfortunately, the statistics are not there to take advantage of those situations. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean we can't have great intraday opportunities if we have the right indicators. But as I said, most people don't have the consistency or the commitment to do that or the methodology. Some people do, and for those of us who do, that's great.
Yeah, because it would be helpful if there was some other administration that had this kind of relationship or non-relationship with the Fed. Because I cannot recall in my mind since the late late 70s, 80s that I've been watching things that I'd ever seen this type of acrimony between the two.
That's true. Unfortunately, not predictable.
Right. And that was what I mean. Not just talk about it. If there's any stats behind it, it would be interesting. Otherwise, it's just basically banter, right? Okay. Michael, you've got reasons why you think it's going down this week, and give us those, please.
Sure. I have to kind of piggyback again on what Jake said, because what my position on the fact that I believe that prices will move lower is because I'm an intraday trader, is because I do have the instruments where I can really take a look. So I'm not really taking that long-term view. I'm not looking on a weekly basis. I'm not looking at the monthly basis. So rallies may continue over that period of time, but this pullback and what's going on in the real world, I believe is going to continue to drive prices lower. Does not mean that we won't rally, witness today, or that we may not rally on Friday, but it's from what point we may rally from. And I believe that downside is not over. And whether that's going to be triggered by another tweet, it's going to be triggered just by overbought, oversold, I don't know. None of us know that. But I can tell you, based on my view, the chart pattern is so incomplete to the downside. And I'm looking at a daily chart. So if I switched over to the hourly, it would even be a larger notice that the market does need to finish to the downside. I think on a weekly basis, it does start to appear that we might barely be getting a little bit oversold. But on a daily and on the hourly, no. They're still pointing pretty strongly down. On my daily chart of the S&P, the 200-day comes in at 2848. It has been violated 1, 2, 3 times and since the end of July. And each time it's kind of bounced back up and gotten back above it. But it remains kind of flat. And so I'm thinking if we go and break that, then it might just start more of an avalanche type of people getting out. The other thing that I want to bear in mind, and this is not to go against what Jake is presenting on a very long-term scale in terms of, you know, seasonality scale, that, oh, never mind, it just went right out of my mind trying to come up with seasonality. Seasonality. I'm sorry, Jake.
It's happening to me too.
I know, right? It's like, gee, I had a thought and now it's gone. I do believe in seasonality, but I think that there are things that can just override it. If we run into something negative towards the end of this week, again, as Jake said, and I think as also Mark has said, if things really, we get a tweet, we start to see that it's like this whole icing on a cake that we're seeing coming out of the G7 meeting. Oh, that China's going to come in and talk to me. I think that's just BS, because it is, because you got to put a calm over the market. You got to calm things down because what happened on Friday. And I think if that doesn't pan out and we have a 3-day weekend coming up, you got a lot of traders who are going to be like, I'm not holding this over the weekend.
Yeah, there seems to be certain levels right now, 2890 ballpark area and 2950 ballpark area, which, you know, is some type of resistance. So on these rallies, you know, those would be areas, if it was going to fail, that it might have some selling.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah, sure, Jake. What do you got?
I'm an equal opportunity trader, by which I mean I will trade anything that moves. If you take a look at the global picture, corn, soybeans, wheat, oats, soybean oil, coffee, cocoa, sugar, all of these markets this week are beginning to ignore the news, by which I mean they're not going lower. Last night when the stock market opened, down huge amount. Soybeans opened 15 cents higher, ignoring the China news. That's very significant as a leading indicator. So what we want to do is look at the global picture and say, hey, I'm not married to the S&P. It's not the only market I trade. There's so many other opportunities. We need to look at them. Things like OJ futures, which I haven't traded in 25 years, beginning to act in a very significant technical way, which is saying most commodity prices will rise. Gold opens 20 bucks higher last night. It's $2 higher right now. Very significant opportunities developing in above and beyond just the S&P.
Okay. All right. With regards to the next question.
Can I just interject something really quickly?
Sure. No, absolutely.
First of all, I found the options trade on Freeport McMoran. There was a large.
You're having trouble with these Irish names. It's McMoran, isn't it?
McMoran.
Just call it FCX.
Yeah, I just call it FCX.
You got to get over to Dublin and learn these Irish names and come back over here. You
know? You're right. Well, I live in Miami. Nobody in Miami is Irish.
Right. All right. So what do you got?
It was there was a really large position placed on the November 15th $9 call.
else.
And I just wanted to let you know that. And also, just one other thing. I respectfully really disagree with Jay in that, like today, I had four trades on the E-mini. I had one loser and I had three winners. Each of the winners were about 5-point winners. So I had 15 points to the plus side and I had a loser. A Trump tweet is like nourishment to a day trader. That kind of, the volatility that he creates creates tremendous, intraday opportunities to trade. Because as long as you get these massive swings in price, you can make an enormous amount of money. And I agree with Jake, and that's why I have an options portfolio that usually takes positions that are 2 to 3 months out, that it's important to also take a stance on a much longer term position. But I think you're missing out on a nice revenue stream if you don't leverage that kind of, the kind of opportunity that Trump creates. And so, I think right now is really a great time to day trade.
Can I make a comment about that, Mark?
Sure.
You know, in life, we have a choice. You can either work at McDonald's or you can get a good job. If I want to day trade for $400 or $500 a trade, the only way I'm going to make any real money with that is by trading large positions. Most day traders don't have the money to trade large positions, by which I mean 40 or 50 contracts of S&P. Therefore, it's untenable for most people. Most people have a real job. They can't sit in front of the computer and do what you do. And if you can do that, Mark, more power to you. But most people can't do it consistently. If you can show me someone who's consistently made money day trading for the last 2 years, I'll show you someone who is really good. But most people aren't. For me, at my age, 72 years old, I'd rather sit back, watch the big money with the least amount of effort. But again, the market provides us numerous opportunities. And if you can do that, Mark, fabulous, more power to you.
Everyone's going to have a niche, on which way to approach the market. And, Jake, you've morphed into more of a intermediate and longer term trader and have abandoned a little bit of the short-term stuff?
I do short-term stuff 3 to 5 days, but day trading, I don't like the pressure.
Yeah. It's not for everybody, but a day trader would probably tell us that, swing trading is not for everybody either.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
That's the beauty of the markets out there.
Absolutely.
300, 400 million people in the U.S., and there's a percentage for everybody. So what Mark's doing and Michael's doing on a shorter-term basis, obviously it's not for everyone. Nothing is, but it certainly does have a crowd out there because I've been to enough of the trading conventions and whatever. And there's quite a lot of people who like to do this intraday stuff. So there's doubt about it. Sure. But
I add a quick comment?
Yeah, sure.
Jake is correct. If you're coming in to day trade with a $5,000, $10,000, even a $25,000 account, your risk.
Hello.
Michael? Yeah, I lost him.
All right. Anyway,
can I respond finish? Really?
He was
quickly.
Right in the middle of saying something very important. Yeah. Which
right,
I agree.
Right.
Please continue, Jim. Was that Jim?
For Michael. Michael, is your audio working now?
Yes.
Michael, okay. Well stated. Please continue.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you're not correctly funded, it's going to be really difficult. And so what's kind of happening right now is we have a lot of these little sideline companies that are saying, hey, come on in, trade our money, prove that you can do it and take our test and whatever. But these people are paying them $150 to $300 a month for an opportunity to trade margin money.
Right.
And so I think people need to be very, very careful. If you indeed want to day trade, it is not impossible to do with $5,000, but it's going to be a really big task. And if you are going to try to come in and play against the larger algorithmic firms, then you must have bigger money because you have to be able to live through the swings. If you're feeling that the market's going to go down and you're trying to trade it in that way, you can get stuck in a trade that it'll go $10, $15, $20 against you. And
totally
then eventually turn and go back exactly what you thought.
Absolutely
so without
correct.
A larger account, you're sunk. You're out.
I think one of the things of day trading, I'm just talking about my own opinion, is that I think some people do gravitate to it because they believe believe, whether they be right or wrong, that they can keep things on a very short leash. That idea of I don't have overnight exposure. So if a rack attack Iran, I'm not going to be in there for that or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, I think
a lot of the volatility happens overnight. Yeah. So if you have option,
that's the advantage of the short term trading is that you don't have overnight risk.
But even intraday, you need to be able to live through the drawdown, and you can't do that with a small account.
Yeah,
you're right, and I applaud you for saying that, Jake, because it's absolutely true. And I think people need to have a realistic view of what the expectations really are. You're coming in with, and you're shorting yourself, and believe it, $5,000 to a lot to many, many people, that's a chunk of change.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So here's the major thing that I tell people: do not invest any money that you are not willing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, managing your bankroll and any risk engagement is obviously a big part of sustainability. And sustainability, right, hopefully will be an added advantage, because, you know, the cards will come your way at some point.
One more comment, may, yeah, if I can.
Right.
Most people don't know how to maximize profits. So here's the problem. They say, my goal is to make $500 a day. Well, $500 a day is crap. But they say, as soon as I've made $500 a day, I'm done for the day. My goal is to make as much money as possible during the day, not $500. So people have this idea, if I could just make $500 a day times 270 days a year, I'm done. That's not really the way it works. If there's a way to maximize profits, let's do that. And then let's turn that $500 trade into a $1,500 trade per contract. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I trade short-term, day trade, and intermediate term. I've got to get that profit maximizing strategy. Otherwise, I'm sunk.
Is part of your strategy with that kind of mentality a progressive strategy, where maybe you start out with one contract, just use a number, and then you go up to two, three, or four if you feel like you're catching something?
I do it the other way around. I start with my biggest position at the beginning and then peel off contracts.
Then you fade out.
And build my pyramid the right way.
I got you. Yeah, in other words, in your original decision, you figure that is the highest probability decision. And then after that, you're trying to reduce risk because your opinion is coming to fruition.
You hit the nail right on the head. That's my style, but hey, that's just me.
No, there's obviously many styles. I just wanted to get an idea where your vantage point was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the way, talking about that, Mark or Michael, let's talk about that. You know, do you guys have a certain type of a management of position, you know, where you're either adding or subtracting positions from the original?
I do, actually. And it's exactly what Jake just said. I start with a 5 lot or a 10 lot. And as the trade is going in my direction, I'll start taking it off, which is, again, decreasing your risk, and you're taking profit along the way. So, but before you enter that trade, I think people really have to understand, it's like, not that we can predict every single move in the market, but have an idea. And you must 100% honor your stop. That's your risk management tool. And if you can't honor it, you're out. You lose.
Gotcha. Mark, did you have any... I just wanted to let Mark chime in here if he had anything to add about his personal opinion on position management.
Sure. First of all, I think that Jake is underestimating or overestimating what a lot of day traders are looking for. In my trading room, we're looking to make between $300 and $500 a day. Now, if we can consistently do that, that's about $1,500 a week, and it comes out to about $75,000 a year. Now, to a lot of people, that's not a lot of money. But remember, if you can do that, I only trade two contracts. If you can do that, and I purposely keep it low so that everyone in the room has enough money to trade what I do. If you can do that, and our percent win for the entire year is 79%. So we're trading with 79% accuracy. And that is our goal. And I think one of the most important things, it's 60% is getting a great entry. And then 40% is trade management after you enter the trade. Now, one thing that we do from time to time is if we get an early retracement in a confirmed trend, we'll add a contract, because that really boosts your profit. And what I look for is a granular profit loss. Like, I don't want to take a huge drawdown, nor do I look for a $5,000 day, because everyone is correct. Most people cannot afford a huge drawdown. Once you're down $1,500, you've lost most of your traders. So we're looking for a small drawdown. We're not looking to hit a home run. It really is fitting to most people's style. It is highly stressful. And every time I take a trade, it's like a cardiac stress test. And just the last thing is, in order to respect those people, who do work, we're opening a room at 8 p.m. in the evening Eastern time to trade the Nikkei, because we do have a lot of traders who have a full-time job. They still want to just augment their income. If you're a middle-class blue-collar worker and you make $50,000 to $75,000 a year, and you can double that trading at night, it's really a lot of money to a lot of people.
Can I make a comment?
Yeah, Jake, what do you got?
So look, here's the deal. $75,000 a year is pure crap. It's worthless. No reason to take risk to make that kind of money. Someone can go out and get a job with guaranteed health coverage, retirement, and not have to take that kind of risk. So to make that kind of money each day, someone's been drinking the Kool-Aid, no offense intended. I'm in this game to make big money, not to make small money. So what happens is the average individual doesn't have the consistency or the ability to participate in the game. You need to have money to get started. You need to set your sights a lot higher than a few $100 a day. My personal opinion, no offense intended to you, Mark, but I don't think people can do that. My experience with thousands of traders over the years has been they can't do it. They don't start with enough money. They don't have good methods. They can't take big profits. They're sunk. And if you can do that for the next 5 years, show me and I'll appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, like I say, the short-term trading, obviously is a different animal. And again, people have a lot of different objectives. Some people want to make a large amount and some are just trying to make shorter amounts. Everyone's got a little bit of a different take on it.
The market's not a piggy bank.
Yeah. On the gains of 500 a day or something like that, obviously the good news is if you can get to that level and get out, that's great. And then on the not so good news is, maybe if the thing kept running, you could do that. Mark, do you sometimes, if you hit the objective, let it run a little further than that? And what kind of techniques do you use to try to maybe let something that looks more like Secretariat than a trotter do its thing?
I mean, what I found is that we do a 6-month analysis of the average true range of every instrument that we trade. So that gives us an idea of how far the average swing is going to be. So that's how we set our profit targets on each individual instrument. Like on the E-mini, our first target to take off is 1.5, and our second target is 3 points.
Okay.
Of the three winners I took, they all went 5, but we were out at 3 because the average trade is only going to go, the average swing is only going to go 3.
Right.
And I don't like to take a reversal candle because I give back too much profit. And the thing is that I don't think that there's a lot of, if a trader does not have enough money to day trade, which takes between $5,000 and $10,000. If you start with less than that, I think you're going to be, you're going to be in a hole, but you can trade 2 contracts. If I don't think a lot of traders have the money, and they should though, Jake, but I don't think they have the money to create longer term swing trade positions, say in stock, or long-term positions and options.
Yeah.
Because they just don't have the capital.
Yeah, this is a situation where obviously each customer has a certain amount of risk capital, and if you only have a smaller amount of risk capital, there's one way to go, and there's many different ways to go. Jake is more discussing a little larger capital, obviously, and looking for a little bit more of a swing to an intermediate longer-term deal, and then trying to catch, obviously, a more substantial potential. Michael, yeah. Let's bring Michael in real quick, and Michael, why don't you expound a little bit on, how do you approach things as far as, amounts of money to put into this, that, and the other, and and what instruments you tend to be focused on? Because, Mark, you sound like you're pretty all over the board as far as the stuff that you'll trade, right? You have some stock indexes and stuff on the U.S., but you just said you're not also unfamiliar with trading the overseas indexes, correct?
Well, we're going to start to trade the Nikkei for the first time.
Yeah, but I'm trying to say is you're doing mostly indexes and either U.S. or abroad?
No, I mean, in my room in the morning, I trade crude oil and I trade the E-mini.
Okay. So you're doing a little bit on the oil and the E-mini, and those are very popular trading vehicles, so that's good. Yeah, Michael, turning over to Michael, let's let him get into this conversation here. And Michael, what instruments are you working with?
Yep. There are a lot of people that will just trade crude and trade the S&P, and there are a lot of rooms that are based on those. And for the most part, from what I can see, they do fairly well if the traders kind of pay attention. What I really, use an ATR. I use one of those too. I use an ATR, which is going to be a signal generator, but of course it's tweaked to my algorithms. And I came to a decision a couple years ago that if you can't beat the algorithms, you got to join them. And to join them, you also have to have an algorithm, because it's not a person, it's a computer, and it's scouring the market, and boom, it's got the trade way before you. So I think as a day trader and as a human being, there's many, many times you'll see it, you get your signal, people question it. Your mind will question it. You go, oh, gee, should I? Oh, maybe I could buy it. Maybe I shouldn't. Should I wait for a pullback? Boom, trade's done and it's gone. You know, it'll go off. So I pay a lot of attention to my signal generators. And then you have to be able to physically take the trade. You've got to be able to push that button and to go in and buy it or sell it. I honor my stop. Now, if you're going to go for the bigger money, then you got to put your stop in a place where you're going to be able to risk a little bit more as well. Because the last thing you want to do is get knocked out and then it goes directly to where you wanted it to. So honoring stops is real important. If your position sizing is very, very important. I don't tell people to start with 5 contracts because they're going to blow out the account on day 2. So you have to start with 1 contract and you work with somebody and you show them how quickly profits can come up and how quickly they can be taken away. The markets that I trade primarily are NASDAQ, which the volatility in the NASDAQ will spin your head around real fast.
Are you talking about the Qs or is there a different index?
No, I'm talking about the future.
Futures.
In the NASDAQ.
Oh, the future. Okay, sure.
And I trade gold, but that's because I've had a core position in gold basically my whole trading career.
You've been very constructive on gold for a long time and it's paying off nicely.
Thank you. But I have to tell you, that's the market. And Jake, I think you probably will back me up on this. I go to look at gold. Now, I'll tell you, there was something up and it had to do with interest rates. And this is prior to the Fed making their announcement. There was something up because the bid in gold was huge all the way. They just bought it against the fact that the market, you know, there's a contra effect, market higher, gold goes down. But that's just an unfounded BS statement because it is. That's the way it is. But the fact that the dollar was moving, the euro was moving, and things started to get a little unraveled there, then he comes out with this announcement. So somehow gold traders I find to be some of the most intelligent traders on the planet. And they know when the commitment of traders reports come out and they know what the positions are for other people. So they'll shake it up a little bit. But when I see gold, and Jim, it's really what we discussed on one of the other shows, that we've got resistance levels and it hasn't reached them. It's getting close, but it hasn't gotten them. And what I tell people is like, if it breaks 1583, I think it's 83 or 86, and it breaks it with some power and some steam, we're doomed. This market will not go to new highs. Not now. Definitely not now. But I'm just going to leave. That's another conversation. I'll just put it up on the side.
Sure. But the main things you're trading, Michael, would be the NASDAQ, the gold, and what other markets?
And the treasury bonds, which
and
is
the
a big, big animal. Treasury bonds at 31.25, a tick.
Yeah.
A tick. That's
so
the biggest
you're working with the 30-year, not the 10-year, huh?
Yes, the 30-year, correct.
All right. Well, there's been a lot of action there. The yields have collapsed from 3.5 down to under 2, so certainly there's been volatility there in the last 6 months, that's for sure. Is there any particular markets, this is a reasonable question, is there any particular markets, Jake, that you are, you know, a little bit more involved in than others? I know I saw from the board, you got a lot of stocks, and obviously you can look at anything, but is there a handful that you would be your favorites?
I really like the bond market. It's stable. It's professional. Mm-hmm. It's not as volatile. It is 31.25 a tick, but a beautiful market technically, follows the rules. I love the bond market. Very consistent, but I will trade anything that moves.
Yeah. The bond market and also the bond market this year has been inordinately profitable to the bulls. An ETF, EDV, is up like 33% this year, and its long-term return average is 8%. So, you know, sometimes I'll look at the long-term performance of something, and then the intermediate performance and the short-term. And if you see the short-term is inordinate to the others, sometimes that gives you an idea that things are getting ahead of itself. Conversely, if they're very much weaker than the norm, it might be signaling an opportunity. So I think it's helpful.
Yeah. Can I comment about gold?
Sure.
Absolutely love the gold market as an investment.
Yeah.
About the start of this bull market in gold, for the first time since the late 1990s, commercials were buyers of gold.
Yeah.
It's a known fact that before this move started, central bank buying of gold throughout the world was huge. And that's the fundamental that's underlying this market. But technically speaking, the gold market is in a beautiful uptrend.
Now, here's my question to you guys on the gold, though. I mean, obviously, it broke through 1350. That was your go-in side. And now we've gone as high as around 1550. Michael was talking about 1580 as a resistance potential. The 200-day moving average on gold's in the 1300s. It being this far away from the 200-day average, this close to some resistance, would you be a little concerned about taking additional positions up here, and any new investments you might want to make should be done more on a pullback? Or do you think it's just a parabolic jump because of, deficit's going to be $1 trillion. Fed wants inflation. They want the weaker dollar, and that's all a recipe for higher gold. What do you guys think about right now?
What's of concern to me is the fact that last night gold opens $20 higher and it can't maintain that strength.
Right.
That's of great concern on a short-term basis.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with what Jake said, but I'm holding to that 1583 resistance level, and that's against a very long-term chart. I mean, my chart goes, it's 20 years that I have showing right now. So on a 20-year basis, what Jake said is important. You start to notice what's happening in the market. It opens up big, can't hold it, and now finishes down 40 cents on the day, which again, people say, oh, 40 cents is nothing, but when it was up 20, it certainly is. So you start to see the signs that it might start to be unwinding. Now, correct. What could that mean? Well, we're going to get a pullback. So if you're going to get a pullback and you can really notice it, you can see it coming, and your technical indicators and your other indicators are showing you that, then there's two things. If you want to keep that position, say you're long the future or you're long physical, you need to put something underneath it so that you can sit with it and let it come down, and then you can lift hedges and add to your position.
One more comment if I can.
We're going to do.
Yeah, what do you got, Jake?
That's how you would play it long term for me. Yeah. And it's not that difficult. You're not really wrapping it around in a calendar spread, or you're doing something complicated. No, you're to go buy some puts.
Is it possible? Is it possible, Michael, to do a collar on it? It seems like it'd be tailor made for a collar. If you don't think on this first run to 1580, it's going to blow out, wouldn't you look at the 1600 calls and the 1620 calls, and then maybe use that premium to buy something could buy a 1490 put?
Yes. But the difference is that if I'm selling calls and the market tends to then pops above 1600, you lose your hedge.
Yeah. Now that's the opportunity risk whenever you hedge.
Exactly. But so, if I own the option, that then, you know, the exercise risk.
The puts are probably pretty pricey at this level though, because, you know, obviously the volatility is
high. That's so, the other thing I wanted to
add. By the time you back out the insurance premium, you know, you've lost a lot of your gain anyway.
Right. And I agree with you on that. So I think that when you're looking at the market, we have to determine what is the volatility at the moment. If the volatility is really high, no, I don't want to pay premium, then I'm going to look to sell gold.
One thing to consider, gold opens $20 higher last night, makes a new high for the move, and closes lower on the day. Consider silver up 24 cents today. So there's a market rotation factor. Traders rolling out of gold into silver for the shorter term. So that's another possibility to protect your profits.
Silver is at about 88-1 on the gold to silver ratio, and it peaked out about, what, 93-1?
I believe so. So right now, silver's trading at 1765, gold at 1537.
Yeah. Two questions that come to my mind sometimes is, one is the platinum at such a big discount to gold, and silver lagging the gold so much and the ratio being so high. Is it because the platinum and the silver has lost some of their industrial uses?
Platinum is trading at a discount to gold of several hundred bucks. many years ago was the other way around. So I think of the three, platinum has the longest term potential as a cheap investment right now. Take a look at what happened to palladium. Platinum's going to go that way too, but it's going to be a longer term proposition.
Mark, do you, Mark Sachs, do you do anything with these precious metals? Because it does seem like they're getting more active, obviously.
Mark takes all his money from day trading and invests it in gold.
No, that's not true. I mean,
yeah, but there's a lot of action on a day trading basis on it too.
That's true.
I don't, we're going to start trading gold at, you know, I just want you to know that I just got back in. We're having a huge storm. It knocked out all the electricity in the building. And I was just able to get back on. I have taken a couple of bullish positions on the gold trust, GLD, and we're going to be day trading gold. And also I've taken bullish positions on the gold miners in the options portfolio. So I do pay attention, but, and I've been very bullish on gold, and both those, all those options positions have been bull call spreads.
I just, and it's a side comment, Mark, but hopefully one that might be helpful. When you're trading the miners, even the juniors, sometimes you look at the price and it begins to go, wow, that's really attractive. Look how low that is. It has all this room. The one thing that I think you have to include in the equation is, and you can find this through their annual reports or just through a little bit of internet research, find out how much it costs that particular miner to actually mine the gold.
Right.
And to bring it to market. And that's going to tell you why it's priced the way it is.
Super important fundamental, correct.
Yeah, very good. And that's when I'm just, as you're looking for these investments, sometimes people say, well, it's gold. Look how gold's going. I want to buy this cheap mining stock because it should react. And then it doesn't react as much as another one because of that factor.
Depends on how much of their gold they got hedged and at what price.
Right.
Now, one quick question, you guys, on hedging a portfolio. Obviously, with Michael and Mark, you guys are doing short-term trading, and your idea of a hedge would be probably to put a stop in, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that's about it when you're day trading. You put a stop in, that's your hedge. But Jake, do you have any input on different forms of hedging that you'd consider with your swing, intermediate, and longer-term trades?
Against a longer-term investment portfolio, like a retirement portfolio, we will buy or sell ETFs depending on our position to hedge against what we have. So that's an easy call.
So kind of reduce your exposure or rotate.
Exactly.
Okay.
Do you do that once a day?
Yeah. Sorry, say again.
Do you do that once a day?
Do we do that once a day? No, it's an investment portfolio, so we will do it once a month.
No.
Okay.
One hedging tactic, that isn't talked about too much is a replacement trade, where if you've made $50 on a stock, or could be on a commodity, and you take that $50 off, you take a portion of that $50 and you replace it with a call, which gives you a limited risk exposure if there's going to be any further upside, but it also sidelines, most of your $50. Do you ever do a replacement trade, Jake, or anybody else?
We will replace
on the gold. If you're long a future in gold, you'd have a big gain of $200. If you then think we're going to go through 1580 on the first run, one thing you could do is take your $200 and replace it with a bull call spread for $7 and obviously pocket the rest.
We don't do options, but we will replace, for example, a big profit in FedEx with UPS if the price is right. So we'll do that within the industry group.
And then in that case, you would be doing a value play like some people might have dumped Walmart and rotated into Target before it had its big run.
Exactly.
And that would have been a brilliant move because obviously the volatility on the upside of Target has trumped the Walmart volatility tremendously.
Exactly.
Yeah, because the P/E ratio is 15 or was 15 on Target and it was like 30 on the Walmart. So from a valuation basis, it made a lot of sense to switch over.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Jim, if I can just add, in an options portfolio, especially in this environment, I always hold two positions that are bearish. And last week when the market made took a real beating, I closed out a bull put spread on Microsoft for 100% of my net credit. So I only had one bearish position, but I always hedge the portfolio that I recommend, especially right now with a couple of positions to the downside where the risk to reward is really excellent.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Hey, we're coming up to the top of the hour, you guys. And obviously we went over a lot of information, but before we leave, I'd like everyone to again, get reacquainted with yourself and also exactly how to get a hold of you. And if you have any special offer or any comment you want to add, this would be the time to do it. So let's start at the top here with Mark. And again, how can people get a hold of you? And do you have any special type offers you're giving out today?
Well, we're giving out a $1 trial in the room. We had a lot of new people in there today. So if you'd like to come into the training room for a buck, this is a really great time. You can just go to the website at www.rightlinetrading.com. Our phone number's there. We'll send you a dollar link. And if you want to swing trade options and day trade futures, we have our room that opens at 9 a.m. Eastern, and very soon, right after Labor Day, we're going to have our room that opens at 8 p.m. To trade in the Nikkei crude and gold.
Okay, sounds great. And the website again, Mark, is?
www.rightlinetrading, all one word, .com.
Rightline, RIGHTLINE, trading.com?
Yep.
Okay, sounds good. Michael, what do we got going at your place, and how can people get a hold of you?
I don't have anything going, and I do that specifically on purpose. I found when I was giving offers and I was doing special deals, got a lot of tire kickers. And I tend to really want to I want to deal with people that are serious and ready to come in. And I always find it's like, so I don't do, I will give a trial, but you can come in and pay what it is, and I'll limit it to a month. In any case, I can be reached, and please do feel free to email me. I do answer all the questions, and I can put some things on offer in that respect should people desire to want something like that. But you can contact me at michael@logicalsignals.com, and okay. I'll be more than happy to answer your questions or help you out in any way I can.
Sure. And Jake, you've got quite a bit of information at your shop over there. How can people take advantage of it? Anything special you want to offer at this time?
Go to my website, trade-futures.com or jakebernstein.com. There's a lot of information there. I have nothing for a buck. To do business with me, it's going to cost you some real money and have to make a real commitment, because I find that most people are not serious. They don't want to trade. They want someone to trade for them. Spoon feed it to them. I don't do that. If you want to learn how to trade, I can teach it to you and you'll make money, but it's going to be a little costly to begin with. You got to make the commitment. If you have a question for me, jake@trade-futures.com.
That's jake@trade-futures.com.
You got it.
Okay, great. Okay, I'm Jim Kinney. I'm the content provider at optionprofessor.com. And every week I do have a newsletter that I do send out to everybody. And for those that are interested in large cap stocks that are paying between 4% and 6% dividends, I do have a list of those that might be of interest to you as well. optionprofessor@gmail.com. Okay, I think we had a great broadcast. A lot of stuff was gone over. I hope everyone gleaned some good information and also wrote down those websites and email addresses so you can contact the guys and get more details. Right now, I'm going to turn it back over to David and thank everybody for being here today.
Jim, thanks for being a great moderator. And David, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Great show. Lots of good discussion. So just a quick reminder for everyone listening. Be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com and get the recording of this episode as soon as it's available, and any of the or access to the report or any of the past shows. Let's see. Analyze Your Trade, episode number 91 is tomorrow. If you want to watch that live, just go to timingresearch.com/live. Matt Buckley and Jim Kinney will be on that one. And just want to thank my guests again for today. Mark Sachs of RightLineTrading.com, Jake Bernstein of Trade-Futures.com, Michael Filigera of LogicalSignals.com, and Jim Kinney of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.